Planta on the Line interview segment here on thecommentary.ca. Joining me this morning to talk about her new book, a novel, How Happy to Be, is Katrina Onstad, a film and culture writer for CBC Arts Online. Her work has appeared in Saturday Night, Toronto Life, Salon, and the New York Times. She's a multiple national magazine award winner and the host of Reel to Reel. Formerly the film columnist at the National Post, the novel is about an entertainment writer named Maxime, who happens to write for a failing neocon paper. We'll ask her where the inspiration for the book lies. Published by McClelland and Stewart, How Happy to Be retails for $24.99. Please welcome to Planta on the Line, Katrina Onstad. Good morning, Ms. Onstad.
Hi.
We had Leah McLaren on about a month ago, and I wanted to, I asked her, and I'll ask you, what do you think of the traditional media about blogs that lump the two of you together, that compare both of your books?
Well, I think a lot of that is sort of only of interest to people in the media, therefore it's reported in the media. But when you talk to actual human beings who aren't in this profession, it's not really that interesting to them. It doesn't bother me. I mean, I think the reason I know Leah and I wish her well, and I think the reason we're linked is because there's a character in my book that people seem to connect with her because she has a similar, sort of more perverted version of Leah's job, which is she's one of these young women writers who writes almost exclusively about herself. So because of that, there have been, you know, some sort of fake controversy stirred up about the connection. But I don't know. I think that most people, when they read my book, that it's not a primary concern for them at all.
Leah McLaren isn't Alyssa Allen?
No. I didn't actually know Leah before I wrote this book, and now that I do sort of know her personally, I realize they're really far apart. This character is a super privileged kind of Toronto WASP. That's not Leah's background at all. I mean, obviously there are professional similarities, and it's everything in this book about journalism is sort of exaggerated and exploded for satirical purposes. So, you know, if there are shades of what she does in her column in The Globe, it's 1,000 times more banal in this book.
What do your friends in the media say about the book? Was working at the National Post really a nightmare?
Do you think it sounds like a nightmare? I think it's sort of a nightmare of her own making. This character, you know, the lens through which she sees the world is pretty corrupted and pretty dark, and I don't know that I really trust her take on anything. I think she's a fairly unreliable narrator, so if it seems like a nightmare, I mean, I think she would be having a nightmare if she was working at, you know, the body shop. Like, her life is just kind of hellish for her. For me, I actually really liked working at the Post in a lot of ways. I mean, I was kind of bewildered by it. I landed there somewhat by accident. I didn't always share the political stance of the paper, though sometimes I did. Of course, it was a paper it actually did have, and people forget this, sort of a diversity of opinion in there, and I never felt fettered or asked to compromise what I believed in my writing. So I was actually quite happy then. I really liked the people in the arts section, and I didn't have to do the kind of job that this character does. This character is like kind of the worst version of an entertainment reporter. It's the kind of stuff that I think would make you crazy. She does these like 2 minutes in a hotel junket kind of interviews with really famous people where there's absolutely no possibility of actually gleaning a human connection, let alone finding anything interesting to write about. And she's just on this kind of treadmill of pop culture reporting that's, I think, really exhausting and unfulfilling. I actually got to write what I thought it was like pretty decent criticism and some sort of thoughtful polemics, and you know, so for me, the Post wasn't the experience that she has. As I said, like, this is super exaggerated. Of course, you know, there are shades of what I went through there, and I'm kind of playing with that, and that's fine. And you asked me, you know, what do my colleagues think, and everyone seems to think it's great. Like, they think it's funny. I mean, it is. It's supposed to be funny, and I think anyone who was there will find it even funnier.
Now, Maxime is mixed up. Mixed up and messed up, and one of the things that you go into the book is her relationship with her parents. Mm-hmm. And I found that fascinating. How much of Maxime is you, and where did you get the idea for the book and for Maxime's just inane character? Insane, pardon me, character.
Good. I'm glad it's insane. Well, how much of her is me is probably only on the professional side, the stuff we just went over. I've had my party girl moments quite a while ago, but they were never as extreme as this. This book sort of has this duality. It has this media satirical section, and then it also has what you just referred to, this background story, this backstory about her relationship with her father, this estranged hippie father, and she was raised in a commune after her mother died, and she has to kind of come to terms with this past, which is completely at odds with her present. And all of that I just made up. I am from Vancouver, but I'm from a very comfortable sort of middle-class Vancouver neighborhood, and my parents are married and like totally functional. they definitely have a kind of a West Coast, lefty liberal leanings that, are, again, I think I sort of am parodying a little bit in this book, but certainly my lifestyle was very, very average, and hers is extremely alternative. But growing up in Vancouver and in BC in the 70s, I met a lot of people who did have these really unusual childhoods, these sort of experimental ideas of family, and I've always found that really fascinating. And in a way, this book is about someone who's trying to reinvent the notion of family or trying to find a version of home that she can live with comfortably. So I see that all around me. I see it in the East too, but I think growing up here in the 70s, where everything was kind of in flux, and you could really feel that these values were shifting all the time. And I think I probably internalized it in some way, and so I was drawing a little bit upon the childhoods that I saw around me as a kid here.
Well, one of the things that I noticed in reading the book was that you talk about Toronto, the culture there, mm-hmm. and you do present it as a character in and of itself. How is the book being received there, and is it an accurate portrayal, do you think, and are our thoughts, people like me from the West Coast, mm-hmm. who've never been to Toronto, are ideas of it validated, do you think?
Well, I'm curious to know, like, what kinds of ideas did you glean from it?
Well, I guess it's sort of cold and friendless, I think, was a word that you used in the book.
Huh. That's interesting. I think that she's really damaged, and she is, again, not able to see the potential that might lie in anything that's around her, in a possible relationships, friendships, in the city in which she lives. She's sort of purposely isolated. I've said before that I feel like she's in a kind of state of perpetual adolescence, which is that time when you get to indulge that sense of solipsism. And, I think one of the signs of adulthood is when you kind of shake yourself awake and reach out to your community and become part of the place in which you live, and she's just not there yet. So Toronto, it can be a really cold place. I was in Montreal for a while, and then I moved there about 12 years ago, and I found it kind of overwhelming, and it's a city that wears its indifference on its sleeve, and you really have to work hard to earn your place in it. And so I thought that it was a great place for her to be, because she would never work hard to find a place of comfort. And if you want to, you can be really lonely there. But like any place, eventually most people do find a way to make it work. Like, I really love Toronto now, but it took me a long time. But I see all the cultural advantages, and I have a great community of friends there, and I have children. And I think once you have children, you're forced to find the warmest places, warmest pockets of your society. So to me, that, I know what you're talking about, that kind of coldness and that friendlessness, but I think that I think it's also germane to any big city. I think all big cities have those qualities. You have to get over it eventually, and I think she does. That's what we're sort of working, this slow progress with her, this kind of plodding trajectory to get her to a place where she can actually appreciate her life, including the city.
Also, I found my perception of it sounds negative, but more cosmopolitan than anything else, because mm-hmm. I don't think Vancouver is as cosmopolitan as Toronto.
Yeah, I think it's cosmopolitan in a very different way. I always I find Vancouver kind of mysterious to me now. It's been so long since I've lived here, and I feel like I don't quite understand how it's working, but it does seem like extremely international and sophisticated in ways that are very different from the ways Toronto is old, like it's established, you know. It's not, doesn't have that sense of being in flux that Vancouver always has. But it is a big international city, and it is where people go to, you know, it's a city of expats, of kind of Canadian expats. Everyone that I know there is from somewhere else, and they've all gone there because there's opportunity there. So it's an interesting place to be, because I think everyone feels a little bit like an outsider, even though they live there.
Would you think it'd be American, more American than any other Canadian city, do you think?
Someone else asked me that here. I thought it was interesting. I don't know. I think it's like everywhere I go in Canada, like fiercely Canadian and very proud to be Canadian. You know, it might be Americanized just in terms of consumption. I mean, the stuff that you can buy, and that there is this kind of New York, Toronto, like invisible tunnel. People just kind of go back and forth. It's very easy to get to New York, and I think those influences flow both ways. But no, you know, to me, it really, you're very aware that you're in Canada, and I mean, that's why I like it there. I've lived briefly in New York, and I think Toronto is kind of New York, but habitable. Is that a word?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Livable.
Livable.
Yeah.
We're talking with Katrina Onstad about her new book, How Happy to Be, a fun and engaging book published by McLelland and Stewart, $24.99. This term chick lit, characters like Carrie Bradshaw, Andrea Sachs, Bridget Jones, did you seek to write a book that fit into that genre, or did the book from your experiences and ideas just flow naturally?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was not thinking of that at all. I don't really read, I probably don't read generically. Like, I have read Bridget Jones, but I don't think I've read too much else under that category of chick lit. And it's been interesting to me that it's, and some people have really perceived it as chick lit, and some people have perceived it as being really anti-chick lit. That's another phrase that I've heard. It doesn't really bother me. I don't really care how people want to categorize it, except unless, of course, chick lit means like trivial stories about women shopping and dieting, and you know, then I am a little bit appalled, and I don't want it on that table with the like pink embossed covers with the lipsticks falling out of cartoon characters' pockets.
Right.
That kind of aesthetic is not. I think it's a really rich book, and I guess I worry about, you know, being ghettoized a little bit. I don't think it happens. You know, I think that when men write about their inner lives, there's not a table that they, you know, at chapters where their book's going to reside forever. So I think, you know, that this book could be read just as well, and it has been read by men, and I wouldn't want to limit the readership like that. But, you know, if people want to read it, it's just, I don't really, you know, just read it. That's all I care about.
You told, I forget who, but about this book, that Maxime's, I guess her trajectory in this book is reconciling her past, her unorthodox childhood with her hippie father, to her present.
Mm.
You called it an emotional crisis. Talk to us about that without giving it away to the audience. But at the same time, does she resolve that dichotomy between her past and her present?
Well, I think she has to leave her present. She has to get out of there because it is so toxic, professionally and personally. And so, you know, as you say, I won't give too much away, but it does involve a journey back to BC, and I think that I don't know if it's resolved, but she's definitely on her way, and part of it is just removing herself from her circumstances, and I think that's something that everyone has to do once in a while at some point, is to acknowledge where they come from. And I think, again, as we were talking about Toronto, that kind of city which is so aspirational, and the momentum is so much forward, and it's a city where you can reinvent yourself to the point where you can forget what made you who you are. And I mean, that sounds sort of pat, but you know, for her, she has just been in complete denial of you know, the values and the culture that bred her. So she has to revisit it and find out how she can live with it in a way that, you know, because obviously it sort of repulses her. Like, it's not a successful commune experience, this childhood of hers. And she's sort of been running from it as soon as she could, you know, for what, about 20 years. So I think that's a really common experience, especially I think in Canada. Like, this is sort of, you know, not technically, but I think you could call it like a bi-coastal novel, and there's this kind of community of West Coast expats in the East, who just don't look back, who just don't want to, like, deal with British Columbia or with their history, and I wanted to get those people to sort of turn west and figure out that there's so much here that they can still learn from. So I had her kind of backtrack in order to go forward, if that makes sense.
We talked about Maxine being messed up and stuff like that, and about the book and where the inspiration came from. Are there people like this, do you think, in your experience? Do you find that people are searching for themselves and trying to do so, I guess, in situations that would make a good book?
I think everyone is. Don't you think that's sort of a great, especially now in the sort of secular times, that we don't have a religious framework to do that searching, so it takes all kinds of different shapes. But I don't think, hers is so overt, right? I mean, it is sort of a dark comic novel, so she is pretty extreme in her bad girl behavior. I never saw anything quite as extreme as this. Definitely there is a kind of debauchery circuit that you can get on in Toronto if you're interested. I'm sure it was going on. There probably are people who are way more off the rails even than she was, but I was like, you know, at home watching The National instead of that firsthand. So yeah, I don't know what's really going on out there.
She's an entertainment reporter, and I found fascinating the cameos that Ethan Hawke and Nicole Kidman play in this book. What do you think you're trying to say about this, our celebrity-obsessed culture, especially in Canada, which really doesn't have I guess we have to worship the stars in the United States, do we not?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much, or we worship ours once they've gone there and been sanctioned, right?
Right.
I mean, I think it's a form of illness. Like, this is a character who's addicted, and she's addicted to drugs and sort of bad sex and also to pop culture. And I think there are ways to, you know, follow popular culture. And I actually, a lot of people have looked at this as a real, like, condemnation of pop culture, and I don't really feel like that. I think that it's, because it's around us, I think we do need to investigate it seriously, and that there are ways to do that. But they're not the ways that she's doing it. So for her, I think, you know, reading Entertainment Weekly religiously and following these celebrities' lives, like, you know, she's following, like, the Greeks used to follow the gods. It was basically another addiction for her. It's just another place to hide her pain and another diversion from what's really going on inside of her. And I think that happens a lot. I mean, there's so much of this stuff now. Like, I'm constantly surprised by that it keeps escalating. That there are more of these bad, you know, these magazines and these paparazzi shots, and now these TV shows. These, you know, those kind of Entertainment Tonight-ish, like, with those crazy sounds, those choo-choo-choo sounds.
Like, right.
You know, they're everywhere, and there seems to be more every year. And you know, what is this doing to us? I think if it's taken too seriously, and it actually starts, for her, it's kind of cluttering up the space in her mind that should be used for investigating not only herself, but the world at large. And so I was very interested in that because I have worked in that world, and I know that it's very easy to become consumed by trivia, and I'm completely guilty of it. Like, I will completely pick up Us magazine every once in a while and just go for it, and shameful, you know. So I was trying to find out if there's a way to strike a balance, and I kind of go back and forth on this. Sometimes I think it's harmless diversion, it's like sports, to be interested in celebrity, and then other times I think it's just total sickness and we should all purge ourselves.
I was looking at on CBC Arts Online, and I noticed that you haven't been there in a while.
Yeah.
Have you purged yourself, or?
No, I'm on maternity leave, actually. I have a 2-year-old and an 8-month-old, so until July, I'm off for my year with my 8-month-old.
And what are you working on now? Just the two of them, or?
Honestly, yeah, that's my creative life right now is raising these kids, and then hopefully next year I'm going to be starting, or later this year, the second novel, and going back to CBC in the summer.
Does this second novel have anything to do with this How Happy to Be, or?
No, I feel I have said everything I need to say about the media and about journalism, just entirely. I'm sort of finished with that, I think. So I think the next one will be actually radically different, and I probably can't say too much more about it than that, but very different, but hopefully as entertaining.
Well, like this book, we'll read that, and continue good luck with this book. It's a fascinating read.
Oh, good.
And thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
It's called How Happy to Be, $24.99, published by McClelland & Stewart. I'm Joseph Plana.